straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 138, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden. I'm joined by my guy, Kirk Bowles. On this week's podcast, we look at the do-or-die weekend for Texas baseball, the Kawhi factor, some white lightning on the track. But first, a very first on our podcast, Texas softball coach Mike White. The Longhorns are playing Sam Houston, 4 o'clock Friday, in their NCAA opener. Coach, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Just trying to get ready for a busy week and hopefully, keep those room keys, keep on playing.
Well, I guess it's been a whirlwind for you. Congratulations, first of all, for getting to this point, being a top 10 seed. So has it been a whirlwind for you? It's gone pretty fast.
Yeah, it has gone pretty quick. It seems like the first half of the season, takes a while to go, and then all of a sudden you're in conference and boom, you're at the end. So it's been fun.
What do you like about your team as you're sitting on the eve of a postseason play? What would you say the strength of this team is, and is it what you thought it would be going into the year?
Well, that's a good question. I think that our pitching, overall depth of pitching is pretty good. We have a variety of pitches we can throw out there. Miranda Ellis, of course, is
right.
Throws in the upper 60s, and Shea O'Leary has got a real heavy drop ball, nice curved drop, and no one really knows her. And of course, we've got the lefty and Brooke Bollinger. Those are the three mainstays that we'll use, but also have Ariana Adams as well, who can mix it up if we have to. So I think that's kind of like the strength of the team. And then we kind of scrap together runs from there. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to play great defense behind our pitching.
Well, Mike, I know tournament play involves a little bit of strategy. Who do you pitch first? Who are you leaning towards, Shea or Miranda for this opener?
That's a great question, and I'm trying to decide that this week. Sometimes there's an old saying in men's fast pitch, not so much in ladies anymore because, you need more of a staff. But it used to be you never get beat with your horse on the bench.
Right.
And,
nice.
It's kind of like one of those deals. But also you've got to think about is it's going to have to be a three-game weekend at least,
And right.
Do you want to win the game or do you want to win the tournament? And so I think it's a delicate balancing act. We're certainly not lighting the scoreboard up with runs, so we can't afford to give up too many runs. So it really all plays into it, and I'm working on that this week. So if you got any divine inspiration, let me know.
We'll get back to you on that. So, well, and you obviously played Sam Houston in the regular season. Who pitched against them in the regular season, Mike?
Shea O'Leary pitched very well and gave up one run. She did well.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
that was a 9-1 win.
Yes, so you don't have the surprise factor then with Shea against them, right? So
no,
that goes
no.
into your thinking as well?
It could, yes. Or it could be just, I'll go back and look at their swings and see how they match up. And, maybe it might be the lefty, throw Brooke out there. Or maybe a combination, we kind of mix it up.
So, right.
Obviously, we're banking on A&M coming through the other side, but
right.
Houston beat them pretty handily this year already. So, there's no that's the beauty about postseason. There just are no givens. You just got to kind of walk the fine line.
Right. And how would you just kind of assess the strength of the field, maybe as compared to other regionals, would you say, Mike?
Well, it's kind of interesting when you look at it. I think you're not going to be, because you just don't know what's going to happen. All these teams typically have a good pitcher, and a lot of it comes down to the depth of the pitching. Like if you look at Oklahoma, they've got three number ones
right.
out there, and
right.
UCLA's got a couple, and so as you go down, and so like I said before, I think that's kind of our strength, but we can't overlook anybody, so it's hard to say. I think that we've got a fair regional, but if we happen to win this one, the Alabama, I don't think they should have been seeded 8.
Right.
I think they should have been up there higher. So that, to me, and I think their regional looks very winnable for them. But, of course, we just try to concentrate on what we have to take care of.
I know, Mike, you guys lost both games at the Big 12 tournament, and it cost you a shot at possibly a super regional host bid. I was going to ask you about how you fared on the road. 23-5 at the house and 18-9 away. I know you're not looking ahead, but does it give you confidence if you guys survive this weekend, and it's definitely survive in advance, that you can go somewhere else and make some noise?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, sometimes it's good to be the underdog. You have nothing to lose, and maybe that might be a great position for us. But you know, we haven't played well against top 20 teams. So that's something to consider as well. But again, I just don't think we've played our best yet. I know the talent is better than what we've been displaying. Although we're 10 seed, I think we still have more in the tank. And as coaches, that's what we're working towards, is how can we get the best out of this team to give it our best effort, because that's what it's going to take, you know, not only to win a regional, but also to survive through to the Supers.
Well, you mentioned the offense struggling a little bit, scored only two runs in those two losses in the Big 12 tournament. What do you think you need to do to get the offense jump-started again?
Well, I've been really playing around with the lineup a little bit, trying to get some consistency out of there. And the only one that's been consistent, well, there's two players. Janae Jefferson's been very consistent
right
this year. You know, she keeps getting her hits. And, of course, Mary Iacopa was very hot for a while there. But all of a sudden, of course, you know, she went cold, this last weekend, Washington's coming around. So we just need to get some people working together. It seemed like we had everybody go on a cold streak together, and we just need some production. Also, the bottom of the lineup, 6-9, we got to get something out of that area of the lineup, because otherwise you're only coming up three times with your best hitters.
I know Janae's had been 4-12, only five strikeouts and 170 at-bats. Is she the best second baseman in the country? And if she isn't, how close is she, Coach?
Well, you know, that's tough to say, because there's a lot of really good hitters out there. You know, Clifton from Oklahoma, you know, comes to mind. I mean, she's got better power numbers, but, Janae is certainly rock solid out there. I don't think she's an orthodox second baseman, but man, she has quick hands. She can really turn it, and she's very gifted over there. And of course, you know, doing her job, just getting on base. She doesn't have the extra base numbers that some other players do, but I'm very happy to have her on our team, that's for sure.
Well, I was going to ask you, I know you come in and you replace Connie Clark, and you come in after leading Oregon to five Women's College World Series in nine seasons. This is Texas's first regional since 2013, and at home, and they're hungry. It's a hungry program that hasn't been great since Cat Osterman got there. What have you done as far as using your postseason experience to let these girls know that there is a chance to be great again?
Well, that's exactly right. You got to change the mindset. And, one of the first things I said, physically, there's not a lot of difference between us and the top teams. It's the mental approach and, being able to handle the adversity of failing more times than succeed. And, executing on the big stage and treating every game the same. You know, the game doesn't know whether you're playing Oklahoma or whether you're playing, Sam Houston State. It's going to reward the team that plays the best. And I think that's one thing we've done well this year, is we've beaten teams we're supposed to beat. We haven't lost to a team below 32 in the RPI, which I think is the secret to having that consistency. Now, on the other side, I know we have a long way to go, to be able to beat those top four or five teams. There's a big difference there, and I'll be up front with you. But again, it comes down to the team that plays the best in the day. And we have a top pitcher out there in Miranda Ellis, one of the top five or six pitchers in the country. You throw a donut up there, you don't lose. So no pressure, Miranda. But
that's
no
a good
pressure.
Strategy.
Well, 0.48 ERA. I mean, man.
No pressure at all.
She's getting strikeouts in her sleep.
How much home field advantage plays a part in softball, you think, Mike?
Well, that's something we really built at Oregon. We got those fans into it. It was a huge advantage for us with 2,500 fans in the stand. We had that roof over there, so it was loud. The fans were close to the field. that's the next step for us here. Mm-hmm. Is we're really trying to build the following for Oregon for Texas softball. Sorry,
right.
For Texas softball, and you know, part of that is creating a winning culture. You know, that helps for sure. And you know, with Chris Del Conte's committed to that $10 million extension on the stadium for the. It's more of a player development thing first,
mm-hmm.
but then the next step is to try to build the stadium so we hold more than, you know, more around 2,500 to 3,000 people, mm-hmm. so we can create that kind of atmosphere, you know, that or in the stadium where it's really an advantage for you as a host team.
How far along are those plans? Is that how distant or how close to the future is that as far as expanding the stadium?
It's still a pipe dream. You know,
yeah.
Obviously, we got to create the demand for
right.
it. But, you know, obviously, we sold out our last four or five home games, and now the regionals sold out,
right?
Which is a great start. And, I mean, the demand's there. We put the product out there, and we perform well. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're committed to being close to our supporters, our boosters.
Right.
You know, we want to make them feel part of the journey as well. And so that's what we're doing. And, you know, it may come quicker than we think. But, mm-hmm. of course, you know, there's a lot of other things happening at Texas, too. You know, there's a lot of, you know, great things that Chris has done, you know, with the football stadium, swimming pool, baseball, you know, you name it.
Sure.
It's like everything's getting renovated, basketball stadium. So there's only so much money. But, you know, that's what we need to find is
right.
Someone who loves softball and is willing to commit to the program.
Y'all got to play so well, you got to make Chris Del Conte dig deep in those pockets, okay? You got to make him want it.
So. He will cut a check. We know that about CDC. He'll cut a check.
Exactly. I had one last question, Mike, is that I watched a lot of your series with Oklahoma on the Longhorn Network, and those first two games were just highly competitive. And, you know, I know that first game kind of turned in that one bad inning, infield single off Janae's glove, and then a couple of errors and stuff.
Yeah.
How frustrating was that series, and how far is the gap between a Texas and an Oklahoma right now, as you see it in year one?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously, you know, it showed that, you know, you get good pitching performance and good defense out there, you can hang with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we did score some runs that first game, I think.
Right.
First game, well, second game, we scored two or three runs.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so we're there. You know, we can compete with them,
right.
But can we beat them over a three-game series? And obviously that answer is no, not yet.
Yeah.
The gap is in the depth. Mm-hmm. We have a few star players, but they have, you know, they have a stable of top 10 recruits,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are in their program already and coming. You know, so that's the battle.
Right.
But, you know, we've got to take what we have. We've got to get better at what we do. And we got to realize that, you know, we may not beat them over a series yet, but we got to beat them out of one game.
Mm-hmm.
We got to stop the streak here, and I think that's it. But then you create the doubt in their mind,
right.
And you create the belief in your mind.
Well, Mike, we wish you the best of luck this weekend. On Friday, the Texas Longhorns play Sam Houston State at 4 p.m., and if you want a little extra, the A&M Aggies are playing Houston at 1 in the other regional matchup. Coach, best of luck. Let's do it again for the Supers, and thanks for calling in today.
Oh, I really appreciate it, and thanks to the fans for all the support. It's great, and welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Well, Doug, that's a confident coach, and he's real, too.
He's real. I like that,
I like
that
the
too.
Fact that he goes, yeah. You know, are we on par with OU yet? Not yet.
Yeah.
I like that.
He recognizes what's real. He's not just Pollyanna pie in the sky. He knows they've got work to do, but, you know, they won 41 games, and they're hosting a regional. Can't expect a whole lot more than that.
You cannot expect a whole lot more than that. Speaking of expectations, Texas baseball, the expectations are always Omaha or bust.
Right.
This year it was bust. Not over yet, though. Three games set starting on tonight against OU. They got to sweep OU or get a little bit of help from the Kansas Jayhawks.
No,
oh, my God.
Or get a lot of help. And when did the Kansas Jayhawks ever help the Longhorns?
Well, last time they played the Kansas Jayhawks, they got swept.
Yeah.
So
they owe the Longhorns.
I don't think
they
that helped.
They owe them a favor. So, yeah, I mean, having to sweep Oklahoma, which is struggling as well. They've only got, you know, 9 wins in the conference, but Texas only has 6. They haven't swept anybody and haven't won a single series since Texas Tech, their opening series at the Dish. So, yeah, it's they've got a myriad problems, you know, injuries to their shortstop and catcher, which we've chronicled over and over, and really raw young pitching. And but you know,
probably, and not enough hitting.
Well, definitely, I was going to circle the not enough hitting, and that's very perplexing. They haven't really been a good hitting team in a while, and it's kind of a mystery.
And they got hot last year.
Well,
at the right
they did,
time,
and especially Cody, yeah.
And got some timely hits. But those timely hits didn't come this year. You wrote a column basically asking, what the hell happened?
Mm-hmm.
Did you like what you heard from David Pierce in that piece?
Yeah, I did. He says he's not planning on making any staff changes, and I'm not saying he should. He knows his staff better than we do, but you better fix that hitting, you know, and there is such a thing as being too loyal to a staff. That's cost many a head coaching person their jobs here. So, and I think Sean Ellen is a good coach, but you know, proof's in the pudding, and you've got one guy hitting better than .272, and that's a freshman, Eric Kennedy. That didn't speak well for your development right now. So that's the one big area of concern I have. And yes, they lost their leadoff hitter, and they lost their number 3 hole hitter in DJ Petrinski, and they should have both of them back. But I think the disappointment is, you know, guys like Mason Hibbler, Austin Todd, Zach Zubia, that should have been the meat of the order, and they just really haven't produced.
Those were the big dogs that were supposed to step up, and they did not step up. And when you're hitting under .250 as a team, you're not going to beat anybody.
No, not consistently. But that's the mystery of this. They sweep LSU. Texas Tech, one of the hottest teams in the country. They beat them 2 out of 3.
They didn't score that weekend, but you know, they did beat them.
Baylor's at the top of the standings, and they split with them, and were leading 6-0 in the first inning when the rains came. So you know it's in this team, and so I think it's very much a confidence level. And you know, they had that painful loss of the series at TCU, and just never seemed to be the same since, especially in the bullpen with Cam Fields and Cole Quintanilla. They've lost, since the TCU series, said they've lost 7 games in the 9th inning.
Oh my God.
That's a scary stat, isn't it?
That's a scary stat, especially when he was so high on this young pitching staff coming into the year. They couldn't hold leads, and how many times did they go into the 9th inning clinging to a lead and someone got blown up? Or they committed some really bad errors. They were inefficient in all three phases.
And we mentioned the injuries, and Bryce Regan, the talented freshman shortstop, just wasn't able to handle that responsibility. And then without Petrinski at catcher, Michael McCann, a senior kind of journeyman, if you will, was asked to be the everyday catcher, and he wasn't really equipped, you know, to handle that role, and he got beat down. I mean, this team's thrown so many wild pitches and pass balls, it's like Michael McCann must have feel like he's in a Dunkin' booth, you know, he's been thrown at so many times. So, you know, but, you know, I talked to David Pierce last weekend. I talked to Keith Moreland and Craig Way, and, you know, most all of them are confident this is going to be a team on the rebound.
Has to be. Nowhere to go but up.
Nowhere to go but up. And, you know, they really need to get David Hamilton back. He's draft eligible. And I would think he'd come back after an injury year like
he
this.
He has zero
just
leverage.
Wiped it out. Zero leverage. And Ryan Reynolds will also be a key, you know, the third baseman. You know, he may leave. It's, you know, it's his draft year. And then Blair Henley, their number 2 pitcher, I fully expect they'll lose him. So they're going to need to, you know, strike it rich with some of these recruits. I don't think Brent Beatty, the Lake Travis third baseman, will ever show up on campus. He's
nope.
Just too valuable, and he'll probably go in the first round next month.
He'll get money.
Yeah. So what have you seen from this team, and what's your expectations?
Well, I saw about 7 games, and they were who they were, and they didn't hit. They didn't feel. Boy, the games I was at, I think they had 1 good game on defense.
Really?
And they booted the ball around way too much. It reminded me of what Augie once said. He goes, if we aren't getting better as the weather changes to hot weather,
yeah,
then we got problems. And you kept waiting on those bats to show up, because they usually do show up.
Yeah.
in April and May. They start to get the power numbers. It just didn't happen, and you kept waiting on that switch to hit, mm-hmm. and it just didn't happen. And
right.
at the end of the day, you just had to accept what it was. They just weren't very good this year.
I think the TCU series where Cam Fields and Cole Quintanilla lost confidence and never really got it back was key. And I think the Baylor series when they got rained out, if they could have won that series, I think, you know, momentum, you feed off of that and it fuels you and makes you feel good about yourself for a change. And they never really had that.
Well, the good thing is they're not dead yet. They need to sweep OU to guarantee inclusion in the Big 12 tournament. If they don't sweep them, they got to win 2 or 3 and hope that the Kansas Jayhawks sweep K-State. First pitch is tonight at 6:30 p.m. The Horns aren't dead yet, but they're really close.
On Second Thought.
Up top, looks at the clock, turns the corner for the win. Hanging in the air. The ball suspended in air.
Duck, did you see the shot?
I saw the shot. I saw every bounce, and I was counting all 4 bounces. That should go down as one of the most famous shots in NBA history.
I think so, too, but I'm not going to call it one of the most clutch because he got some lucky bounces.
It went in,
but it's not Dame Lillard shooting over LaMarcus Aldridge or whatever.
Or Robert Horry.
Or Paul George.
Or Sean Elliott.
Those were swishes.
Those were pure.
Yeah, if people are going to say that Allen Houston's shot against the Miami Heat was luck on a 12-footer, then him fading, Kawhi fading away over Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons mm-hmm. and falling into the bench as the ball bounces 4 or 5 times, I'm sorry luck played a role in that.
But you know what? I think it will grow in stature for these 2 reasons. 1, it was a Game 7. And 2, it was for a franchise that can't get out of its own way and just always stumbles over itself in the postseason. And 3, I guess I've got 3 reasons. It involves an MVP guy in Kawhi Leonard. So those are 3 things that will go together to help it create such a big legacy, I think. And, you know, I know he took a ton of shots, but he scored 41 points when Toronto had to have him. So, I don't know. It is frustrating from the San Antonio Spurs
vantage point.
Is it
frustrating? How do you think Greg Popovich and R.C. Buford are feeling when you see the kid?
They're just glad they got those great 9 games from him last year, right? They're relishing those, so.
I'm sorry. That was a really bad look for Kawhi.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor, but if 35-year-old Tony Parker can come back from a much worse same injury, I just think Kawhi was leveraging his position to get out of San Antonio. And he's out now, but it still has to leave a sour taste in the mouths of Spurs Nation.
And did they get enough?
No.
You never get enough when you trade a superstar.
A superstar that's arguably the best two-way player in the game right now.
Is there only one trade in the history of sports where you got enough for a superstar? You know what I'm thinking of?
No, I do not.
That'd be Herschel Walker.
That was the great trade robbery.
Yeah, they got the other one is the Ricky Williams trade.
That was a great trade,
you know?
Too.
So, but yeah, usually you don't get equal back when you're trading a superstar. And DeMar DeRozan is an all-star, but not a superstar.
He's a good player.
He can't carry a team like a Kawhi Leonard.
DeMar and LaMarcus are good players.
Yes, very
They're
good players.
They're not scared. They're not Steph Curry. They're not Kevin Durant.
No.
They're not Kawhi Leonard. They're not LeBron James. They're in that second tier of really good basketball players.
Right.
Somewhere behind guys like Damian Lillard, who's been electric. Guys like that rank ahead. You had to do what you had to do. They weren't going to trade him in the Western to the team in the Western Conference. Shoot, they got him out of the country.
Wouldn't you love to know what their offers were on the table? What did they turn down?
They turned down a lot.
But we really haven't seen it.
No,
have
because
we?
They're so secretive.
Yeah, but you think it'd leak out from other teams, you know, what was offered to them. You wonder if they turned down much better trade from Western Conference
teams. You're telling me they didn't get offered more than DeMar DeRozan? You know they did. You know they did.
Yeah, but you'd love to know what it is. You need to find out.
Need to find out? I'll call DeMar.
Call Pop. Here's a question. As Toronto advances, now they're in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes.
One step away from that finals. Mm-hmm. Does that help the Raptors' chance of hanging on to Kawhi in the future?
My opinion is they have to win the championship.
Really? Why?
Because Kawhi, I think Kawhi's hell-bent on going to Los Angeles.
So why would a championship change anything?
Because it's hard to put on a ring and not stay. I mean, when's the last
LeBron's time? LeBron's on rings everywhere, and he keeps leaving.
When is the last time a guy won a championship and then left the very next season?
I don't know how many.
I think Moses Malone may have left two seasons after getting that MVP in the 83 finals.
But it's a different free agent world now than it was back then, don't you think?
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to be a good PR moment for Kawhi if he wins a championship in Toronto, the first ever, and then bails for the Clippers or
Lakers.
Do
you think he should leave?
Toronto?
Yeah.
No.
You think he should stay? If you were advising him?
I think he's found the San Antonio Spurs version of North.
I think so, too.
No one really pays as much attention to the Raptors. They're not in America.
Right.
It's a big media market in Canada, but NBA-wise, it's not a huge media market.
But do you think he's hell-bent on going to California?
I do. I think
he'll be a Clipper?
I think he'll be a Clipper.
You think Durant will be a Clipper?
I think Durant will be a Knick.
That's crazy talk.
I know. But I think
you are starting to hear inklings that maybe KD might stay.
I don't think he will.
I think he's crazy to leave.
I hope he doesn't play again and Golden State wins a championship.
Now, that's evil.
That's not evil.
That's evil. That would be a real curse for him if that happens.
Draymond Green said during that feud, it was reported that he said, "We won before you got here, and we'll win after you're gone."
Oh, that would be terrible. That would be terrible for him.
I mean, the perception is KD stopped in and checked off a couple of boxes, won a couple of championships, needed that on my resume. Now I can go play where I want to play.
So what do you think he wants then? That's the question. What do you think he wants?
He wants to be the alpha dog.
I don't think he does.
I think he, in his mind, he wants to be the unquestioned alpha dog.
Well, he's kind of the alpha dog in Oakland.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is. It's his team more than Curry's.
No, he's not.
He's the best player on that team.
You're so wrong.
He's the best player on that team.
That doesn't make it his team, bro.
Oh, it's
his
team.
That was a ready-made championship team before he got there.
Sure, it was.
He is not the heart and soul of that team.
It's
Steph Curry.
They deferred to KD
because
all playoffs.
That's what he does best. He's a scorer.
I know.
Let him do it.
They deferred to him. It's his team.
But that doesn't mean that he's the heart and soul of the Golden State Warriors. Are you kidding me?
You give me 40 points a game, and you can be the heart and soul. I want the guy who's scoring 40 a game.
Yeah.
You're reading too much into that heart and soul.
No, I'm not. No,
nonsense.
I'm not.
Yeah,
no,
you are.
I'm not. And I'm going to tell you why.
No.
I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
Okay. Tell
because
me.
Steph Curry showed the most heart by understanding that Kevin Durant is at his best when he is scoring the ball. They've changed their offense for KD because his skill set is predicated on ISOs, mid-range, post-ups, and threes. That's fine. But don't get it twisted, and you need to refer to Dwayne Wade's tweet after the Golden State Warriors beat Houston the other night. He goes, don't get it twisted. People think that just because Steph set aside some of his offense for KD that he's not still a beast, and he is a beast.
He is a beast.
33 points in the second half.
Hey,
he didn't just pull that out of the air.
I'm not throwing dirt on Steph, but here's what you're missing.
He'll never be as beloved as Steph Curry at Golden State.
Oh, absolutely agree with that. But here's where you're wrong. How many points did Steph score in the first half?
How many points did Steph score in the second half?
Well, just answer my question.
0 points in the first
half. And what was the score at halftime?
I don't remember the score at the
half. I'll tell you, it's 57 all.
Mm-hmm.
All. As in tied.
Okay.
As in Houston choking.
Mm-hmm.
When you take away, basically, you're taking Curry out. Didn't score. Durant's gone. And you're tied in a home game 6 at the Toyota Center. That's Houston choking, my friend.
But Steph Curry still scored 33 points.
I understand that.
Half.
All right, here's another question.
And he makes some ungodly three-pointers.
All right, KD's out that whole Western Conference semifinal series.
Mm-hmm,
Who wins?
If he's out for this whole Western Conference semifinal series, I still give Golden State the edge.
I think the Rockets would have won.
Oh, you're talking about the
first semifinals.
The semi. If he's out for the full semi.
I think the Rockets would have won.
Rockets may would have won because
they needed KD.
KD was playing the best ball of his career.
Exactly. You're making my point.
I'm not making your point.
Thank you for conceding.
I'm gonna say this once and for all.
Okay.
And y'all can email kbowles@statesman.com, cgolden@statesman.com. I'm going to put it up on Twitter.
Okay. What are you going to put up on Twitter?
I'm going to say this once and for all.
Okay.
It's a lot easier for KD to be great when he knows if he fails, he's still got Clay. He's still got Steph.
He's still got Draymond. It's easy for Steph to play with that.
It's easy for Steph to play.
Yeah, don't just circle KD.
But Steph has won without KD.
I understand that.
Has never won without Steph Curry.
I understand that.
He had a chance to be that dude in Oklahoma City. He bailed in Oklahoma City. He couldn't handle
the fact that
he and Russell Westbrook blew a 3-1 lead. He didn't beat him, so he joined him.
Right.
So that's why I believe that Steph Curry will always be the heart and soul and the premier alpha dog on that team.
KD is
a killer, but Steph Curry, give me Steph Curry all day long with the game on the line.
Steph Curry, heart and soul of the Warriors, the glue of the Warriors, the essence of the Warriors, but KD is the scoring machine of the Warriors, so that's why he should stay put.
And guess what? KD was a scoring machine in Oklahoma City. What did he win?
Well, that's partly due to Russell.
Is it partly due to Russell?
They didn't have a supporting cast, I don't think.
You were up 3-1 with
Russell. Has Russell won with any superstar?
Mm-mm, but you're up 3-1 on Golden State with Russell, and you had game 6 at the house.
Right.
Blew it.
Well, I'm not saying he hadn't blown it. All right, speaking of blowing it, Houston blew it.
Yeah, they
correct?
Did. They did.
They choked.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I'm not even saying...
But
not
you know
to
what?
Even extend it to a game 7?
I'm going
to
tell you, 62 points from Chris Paul and James Harden, and they couldn't close. They missed Trevor Ariza. That bench didn't show up.
No.
Gerald Green, they need to get rid of Gerald Green. I don't care where he's from. He's from Houston.
Yeah.
They need to upgrade that bench if they want to compete with the Portlands and the Golden States.
Well, they got mid-level exemption. That's it. What are you going to get for that?
They got to hold on to Eric Gordon. They got to hold on, you know, and, you know, Harden and Chris Paul are sewn up, and Clint Capella is sewn up.
Right, right.
They've got to get a little bit more talent on that bench. They need a Lou Williams type to come off of that
they
bench.
They do.
Where there's not as much fall off.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because when the big dog sat down, that's when Golden State made their run.
Are there a lot of Lou Williams sitting there in the scrap heap?
Not a lot of Lou Williams, but there's some Jamal Crawford types. There's some guys out there that can get you 12 points a game off the bench. They need a J.J. Redick type, a guy who's the third or fourth option who can make a shot in a pinch, and they don't have that. I love what Tillman Fertitta said.
Yeah,
we're going to kick their ass sooner or later.
One day
when Steph and Clay are like 37 years old.
I just don't see this Rockets team as configured as it is now ever beating the Warriors unless the Warriors are just dismantled. If KD leaves, if Klay Thompson leaves, and as they get older. I mean, basically, it's a four superstar team, because I'd put Draymond Green in that because he fills so many roles
for
that.
And don't forget you have a former All-Star and Finals MVP in Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, he had 5 threes?
He had 5 threes
you know,
for the first time in 3 years.
Yeah, but see, it's even more
than... called stepping up.
It's even more than the Rockets needing that guy coming off the bench. There's just something missing there, that killer DNA, that gene that drove Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, people like that, that just kills them. It was when they walked off the court, when Chris Paul and James Harden walked off, they just kind of walked off. It's like,
They're broken.
I prefer Joe Embiid's reaction. He's sobbing like a 6-year-old, and I like that because it hurt.
You know what?
Get
your big butt in the lane, and maybe you wouldn't be crying at the end of the game.
Like that turnover that Harden had, you know, down the stretch was inexcusable. And there were too many times in that series. I'm not talking just game 6 where he deferred to Chris Paul. And Chris Paul is not Hall of Fame Chris Paul anymore.
He's not.
I consider him half a superstar.
I think
James Harden a superstar, Chris Paul half a superstar, and Eric Gordon plays like half a superstar sometimes.
Chris Paul is still top 10 point guard.
Yes.
But
he's not the same.
But I'll go Dame Lillard, Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah.
Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, Westbrook.
Oh, yeah, Russell Westbrook. Those guys are.
Go down the list.
Those guys are all much better than Chris Paul now.
Yeah.
And time is running out on Chris Paul. He's 34 years old.
I don't think it's going to happen.
He might have one or two chances left. He's coming across as a guy who's never going to win a championship.
The other thing, too, I think D'Antoni defers so much to Paul and Harden that I don't know how much coaching he does in the fourth quarter. We're big fans of his because, you know, he's very quotable and a nice guy, and he's always gets his team deep in the playoff. But, you know, D'Antoni's system, they say, well, it's never produced a title.
And I don't think it will.
And I don't think it will either, at least not the way we've seen the Rockets and the way they ended this season.
On Second Thought.
Doug, sometimes it just pays to come to work in the morning. We found out this week that we are hosting a great event, Doug.
We are? You and me?
I love when you play dumb.
What?
Check this out. We are hosting the Best of Syntex Preps at the Palmer Event Center June 10th.
You and me?
At 6:30 p.m. We're emceeing an event that's going to be 500 to 1,000 people.
Wow.
Celebrating the Austin area's best high school athletes.
All of them?
All of them.
Every sport?
Every sport.
Wow.
If you were named Austintex by the Statesman this school year, you need to go to statesman.com/preps. And RSVP for this event.
Well, I bet that's going to be expensive for them.
No, it's not going to be expensive at all.
It's not?
No, it's going to be free.
Free? Capital F free?
It is free.
Oh, my
goodness. Thomas J. Henry Attorneys and Sames Auto Group picking up the tab along with our friends from the big office in Gatehouse, Dog.
And how about our prep brothers?
How about our prep brothers? Rick Cantu and Thomas Jones going to be part of it.
Nice.
I buried the lead. Guess who's coming?
You and me are coming. You already said it.
No, much bigger than us. Much bigger than us.
Well, lay it on me.
Super Bowl MVP Drew Brees is going to be in the house.
No way.
Drew Brees is going to be the keynote speaker. We're going to interview him.
Great.
And the kids are going to get to meet him.
Wow.
And it's going to be a raucous evening at the Palmer Event Center.
Is there going to be food there?
There's going to be lots of food.
I like it.
Lots of food. Ice sculptures. Photos.
So how do these athletes sign up for this?
Go to statesman.com/preps. They're going to give you a special code. You're going to send that code in. That's going to be your free entry. Now, if your family and friends want to come, they can buy tickets for $50 each on the same website. Wow. It's a can't miss event.
And when is it again?
It's going to be Monday, June 10th, 6:30 p.m.
Man.
Palmer Event Center. It's going to be a great night of celebration. It's going to be like the ESPYs, Dog, but it's going to be high school style.
Man, I can't wait. You got me excited now.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 138 of On Second Thought. We got to thank Texas softball coach Mike White for joining us. For Kirk Bowles, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you later.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.